Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
A major trailblazer in the financial service system is Jane Fraser. 2 years ago, she became the CEO of Citi, and in doing so, became the first woman to head a major money center bank. Today, Citi and other major banks in the United States are facing challenges to the banking system. I sat down with Jane Fraser recently to talk about these and other challenges.
Anything new in the banking world?
It's been a quiet week.
Quiet, okay.
Quiet week, David.
So let's talk about what has been going on. Let's start with the easy ones, Silicon Valley Bank. What went wrong there?
Well, before we dive into that, I've worked in financial markets all around the world, and I have to say we're very lucky in America. This is the best financial system in the world. It is the envy of the world.
Okay. But despite it being the best, we have some problems from time to time.
Yeah, but they're isolated problems. So if when you look at it, the financial system's it's broad, it's deep here, it's competitive. We've got some large banks that are well capitalized and a source of strength at the moment. We have medium-sized banks, regional banks, and by and large, they are equally well capitalized, serving their communities, play an important part in the banking system. This is quite isolated.
Okay, but people are still interested in hearing about it. So your bank is well capitalized. Your
yes.
bank, I should have said, is a bank with about 230,000 employees.
Yep.
And about an $85 billion market capitalization. So your bank is in good shape, and your bank is the fourth biggest bank in the United States.
Yep.
Is that right? J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and then Citi. There is a bank on the West Coast called Silicon Valley Bank, or there
yes.
was a bank there. Not as well capitalized. I mean, did the regulators not understand what was going on, or the people in the banking world, people like you, were you surprised by what happened?
You had a combination of two pieces. You've had the macro and some idiosyncratic and factors around Silicon Valley Bank, but then you also had the impact accelerated by social media of what went down. And the rates curve and the increase in rates has been most we've seen, the fastest and the steepest in 40 years. So there's a bit of pain that comes from that. Secondly, you did have idiosyncratic factors, I think is the polite British way of describing them in Silicon Valley Bank. So as all this played out, you saw some pretty serious holes in their balance sheet management, and they had a very concentrated client base. And that client base ended up burning cash much faster than anticipated. And they ended up wanting to raise capital, and it went down pretty quick.
In the Great Recession in 07, 08 or so, the U.S. government passed TARP legislation. And under the TARP legislation, large amounts of capital were injected into banks, including Citi. And effectively, that meant that the shareholders, the creditors, and the depositors were all protected. Mm-hmm. This time around, Silicon Valley Bank was only the depositors were protected. Over a decision made by the Biden administration, others over the weekend. Do you think that was the right decision to protect only the depositors and say goodbye to the shareholders and goodbye to the creditors?
I think it's very important to protect the depositors. Right now, the banking system everywhere around the world depends on confidence, and that confidence has to be in the safety and security of deposits. So in terms of the most important job here, they did the most important job, which is making sure the depositors were whole.
So in the old days, when there were bank runs, you used to see people lined up outside
yeah.
the street and get their money out. Now, you're just on your iPhone or whatever phone you have, you can take your money out. So money moves so quickly. Was that a factor as well in having the money get out of a bank so quickly? You don't have to wait in line. You can just do it over there.
It is a complete game changer from what we've seen before, David. You're absolutely right. There were a couple of tweets, and then this thing went down much faster than has happened in history. And frankly, I think the regulators did a good job in responding very quickly, because normally you have longer to respond to this. So they acted with quite a lot of speed, given how quickly this happened.
So some people say you have a moral hazard when you protect people. So by protecting all the depositors in Silicon Valley Bank, the implication was that if somebody else has a problem, we'll protect them and so forth. And so the $250,000 limit is meaningless, more or less. Or do you think the Federal Reserve and the Secretary of Treasury are saying, we're not going to protect every depositor, or we're going to protect certain depositors?
I don't think they need to go out right now, because the banking system is pretty sound. And we're talking about a few banks. We heard it from the chairman, Powell, today. This is not something that is spread across the entire banking system. This isn't like it was last time. This is not a credit crisis. This is a situation where it's a few banks that have some problems, and it's better to make sure that we nip that in the bud.
Not to pick on the West Coast, but there's another West Coast bank, First Republic Bank, which is around the country but based in San Francisco, and they've had some problems. They've had gigantic decline in their market value and so forth. Do you expect that somebody will bail them out or buy them?
Well, I'm not going to comment in depth on First Republic, because they are actively working through the challenges that they're facing right now. What you saw last week was a number of the large banks, 11 of us, got together to put a large capital or deposit injection into them to help buy the time, to make sure that they could come up with the right solution for the restructuring that's needed.
So the large banks and others put in roughly $30 billion of deposits.
Yeah.
I think you put in roughly $5 billion or something like that. So how did that happen? Did Jamie Dimon call you up and say, hey, you have $5 billion you don't really need and you can put it in First Republic? And is it you have to go to your board to say, I need to get $5 billion somewhere? I mean, how do you make that decision? And was it, you just say to Jamie, I'll call you back, I'll think about it, or how does that work?
So one of the great things about this was actually that the banks did all come back together, because you think of it, we usually try and kill each other in different deals that we're trying to do. So there's a lot of competition between us. But in this instance, this is one where we're in a strong position. We want to stop what could have been a problem. And we all know when there is a confidence crisis, the logic that takes over isn't necessarily rational. So we wanted to go and help protect the system. It's in the interest to do so. So despite this being quite a divisive environment that we're all operating in, this is an instance of the banks coming together and saying, okay, what can we do here to support a system that we have confidence in? And you don't put $5 billion into the system through the generosity of your own heart. You do it because you have confidence in the system itself.
You expect to get that money back eventually?
Yes.
Okay. So Jamie Dimon is a great banker. I think he's been the head of J.P. Morgan for 17 years, something
Who?
Like that. Jamie Dimon, well regarded. But why do you think it is the case that he's calling around and doing this and not the Secretary of Treasury, the Chairman of the Federal Reserve, the head of the FDIC? Why is it a non-government person is doing this? I would have thought a government person would do this.
David, why do you think that Janet wasn't calling around doing it? Do you believe everything you read in the newspapers
on
these times?
Because when people in Washington do something good, they usually have the press know about it. So, but maybe she was calling around. I'm sure she was. But Jamie seems to be getting all the credit, if credit is the right word, or is that not fair to give him the credit?
Jamie played a role. I think we all played a role, and so did.
Okay.
It was a very active discussion over that weekend.
Would Citi consider buying First Republic, or you're not interested?
No.
No, you're not buying. Okay. Another bank called Credit Suisse. Credit Suisse seemed to dissolve very, very quickly. Were you surprised at how quickly that bank kind of went away after about 100 years of being around?
So the nice thing is we're talking about three or four banks out of the thousands that are here in the States and the rest of it. So let's put that in perspective. So Credit Suisse, I don't think anyone was falling off their chair that Credit Suisse ultimately ended up where it did. It was really a question of time. It's been a troubled institution for a long time. Those of you who don't know it, it's a very global bank. in Switzerland. It's got a very strong operation in Switzerland, good wealth management in Asia, an investment bank here in the States and around the world, but it's had a lot of issues. It's had a lot of management instability. It's had a number of different crises and things that have hit it.
Well, Credit Suisse has some great private bankers and they have some great clients. Are the Citi bankers calling up the Credit Suisse former employees and saying you should come here now or something like
that? No, I think they're calling us.
They are, okay, all right, okay.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Growing up, what did you say you wanted to be? The CEO of Citi when you were growing up? What did you think you wanted to be?
I wanted to be a doctor when I grew up, but I was really lousy at biology, so that kind of knew that one
that
ended
quickly. That happens a lot to people who want to go to medical school. So, okay, you grew up in Edinburgh area?
Yep, I did.
And were your parents bankers?
No, definitely not. So my father was a Scottish accountant, which meant you're not really relying on parental generosity and extra pocket money from a Scottish accountant as a father. So I used to earn my pocket money on the golf course at St. Andrews caddying. You would not know it from my golf game, but.
Well, I'm sure it's better than mine. So you went to Cambridge. After you graduated, what did you do?
After I graduated, I joined Goldman as an analyst.
And that's an easy job to get, and an easy job when you have it, you don't work more than 30, 40 hours a week.
Yes.
So how many years did you do that?
So I worked at Goldman for a couple of years, and I was young when I started, and I was the boring girl from Scotland. Everyone else was European, spoke multiple languages, and was a lot more exotic and interesting than me. So after I finished the analyst program, I thought I'd better make myself a bit more interesting, so I moved to Spain.
And, did you speak Spanish before?
I didn't.
So now you speak Spanish?
Sí, hablo español perfectamente. Sí. ¿Qué tal su español?
Well, I know one word, maybe sí or something like that. I don't know.
I thought it was certeza. Yes.
So my language skills are very limited. So,
luckily, after, you have other talents, though,
well,
which is a fortunate thing.
Spanish isn't one of them. But so you do there for a couple of years, and then you decide to go where?
To America.
All right, and where did you want to go in America?
So I did the same again, taught my way into Harvard Business School. And I was fascinated by the American machine. And if you've spent a bit of time in Europe and grown up in the 80s, 70s and 80s, it's fascinating. America is just something you want to try and understand, and the American economy and the American entrepreneurs, not someone you ever want to bet against.
So when you went to Harvard Business School, you entered in 92, something like
yes,
that?
Yes, that's right.
You entered in 92. Were there a lot of women in your class?
Probably about 24, 25%, something like that. Yes.
And
there were enough of us to cause trouble.
All right, you graduate from Harvard Business School, and then you decide to go to McKinsey?
Yes, I did.
And why did you want to be a consultant?
First of all, was why didn't I go back into banking at that time? And I've been in banking in the 80s, where there weren't many women in banking, unlike the business school. They wore suits with very big shoulder pads, and they were more scary than the men. You remember the era. And so when I looked at the consulting, particularly McKinsey, I like partnerships. I think partnerships are great places to grow up. The apprenticeship model is wonderful. A global institution and firm, And also it was, you know, quite strategic in what they were looking at. It was similar issues to M&A at Goldman. But I thought I would have a chance of having a family, a bit more predictability in the work schedule.
So you did it for 10 years, roughly?
10 years, yeah.
And you had two children during that time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You go to McKinsey, you work your way up, you become a partner there.
Yeah.
And, you know, being a partner at McKinsey is a great job. Why did you decide to leave to go to Citi?
Yeah. I became a mum at the same time as I became a partner. And I worked part-time all the way through my partnership years. And McKinsey was fantastic about that because I was able to spend time with kids before they went into school. But then when they were at school, that I felt like, okay, I can go back full-time working again. And I felt like it was time that I could prove that I could do it rather than just advise.
All right, so you went to Citi. At the time, did you think a woman could become or would ever become the head of Citi?
I honestly never thought about it. At that point, it's a firm that there were quite a few women around in. I'd been in an environment that was always very supportive around it, some fantastic male mentors and others. And it was just never something I thought about. This was 20 years ago.
So,
I was just enjoying the day job.
So you had a series of jobs. Every one, you were the CEO of this division or that division and so forth. And one time they asked you to move to Latin America to be the CEO of Latin America. Did you think that was a dead end? You're going to move to Latin America, get out of the way of the succession? Or did you think that was a way to get promoted?
It was a big turnaround role. And it's one of those ones you say, if I did a good job, then that was going to put me in good position for bigger opportunities ahead. And if I did a bad job, then, you know, so be it.
You weren't afraid they would forget you. You're down in Brazil or something, and you weren't afraid they would forget you and everything like that?
No.
Okay. So you did a good job. You come back, and you're the head of the Global Consumer Bank. What is
Yes.
the Global Consumer Bank at Citi?
So that's retail banking, that's a credit card, which I believe you are a proud owner of a Citi credit card, David.
I am. I do have that here. I don't have enough frequent flyer miles on it, though. You told me I'm not qualified for my frequent flyer miles, but...
Yeah, you got the wrong card.
Is this the best credit card you can get?
David, you have the one with our wonderful partner, American Airlines, and they're
how come
it's a 35-year partnership.
But yours is black. How come mine's
yes.
gold? How come I don't have, which is better?
You've got to ask for it, David.
Oh, okay. Yes. All right, well.
Although I suspect you may not be flying quite as much on the commercial airlines.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company, Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Currently, many CEOs are under pressure to take positions on public policy matters. So, positions on voting rights or climate change, so forth. Do you think CEOs should be getting in the middle of talking about those kind of things, or do you try to not do that?
When they matter to your business model and when they're important for progress. If you're a bank, you care a lot about economic growth and progress around the world. So, yes, we will speak out on that. Also, if it's very important to our people, the communities that we're in, will be topics we'll talk about. We don't view it as being political, but it's about what do we stand for as a bank.
Now, what about diversity, equity, and inclusion? What are you doing to make certain you have other diversity standards met in the bank?
It's a really important part of the bank, as I think because we've got people from everywhere who work at Citi, and you know, they want to work for an American enterprise. It's a real compelling point of the bank in attracting talent from all over the world. For Citi, my predecessor really was very focused on making sure that we had strong diversity of all types in the bank. And we worked out that radical transparency is very, very valuable. So we put out 3-year targets on representation. And we disclose those every, we disclose exactly what they are. The targets we have on both recruiting and in retention and in promoting are in everybody's scorecard. And we also have pay equity. So every single year we measure, we have a third party come in and make sure that every woman is paid exactly the same as a man in the same job, performing at the same level.
When did you realize for the first time I could be, or you could be, the CEO of the bank? I mean, you know, there are a lot of people. You have 230,000 employees. A lot of them want to be CEO. When did you realize for the first time you had a chance to get that?
When I was made president of the bank. Because up until then, you don't really have a sense. But that was the point when Mike and John had a conversation about being a likely successor, but no guarantees in life, and I better do a good job.
Okay, yes. So your predecessor was Michael Corbett.
Yep.
He retired about 2 years ago.
Yep.
You succeeded him. What was the biggest challenge you had in becoming the CEO right away?
It was COVID. So this was becoming CEO during COVID is not the easiest because, you know, one's used to going around, going to different sites, seeing our people, seeing our clients in person. And while Zoom did an amazing job, it is not the same. And so you have to learn how to lead in a different way.
Today, Citi is a bank that has announced it's changing its strategy.
Yes.
And you now want to be a consumer and an institutional bank in the United States. Is that right? And you're getting out of the consumer business outside of the United States.
So what we've said we are, rather than what we're not, is that it's a pretty extraordinary bank in its history and in its presence globally. It's uniquely opens the door as a bank in 100 different countries. So the Citi is to be the preeminent banking partner for companies and for investors and for individuals with cross-border needs. And that's the vision of the bank. We will serve that client base as their absolutely critical partner.
Hey, so you've sold a number of your international consumer businesses, and
yes,
you've announced you're trying to sell your business in Mexico.
The consumer business.
Business.
Yes.
Who are you going to sell that to?
Oh, we've been fortunate to have a lot of interest there. Look, we looked at consumer banking, and we could see that. Originally, the view had been that you would get a lot of global scale in consumer banking. And we were very strong in a number of different geographies. But the reality is you don't get as much scale globally. It's much more about local scale in those businesses. So we decided, let's focus. We want the bank to be simple. We want to be truly excellent at what we do. And that's better if you're a more focused bank around fewer business lines. So that's,
all right.
That's the path we're on.
So the bank stock under your predecessors and to some extent under you hasn't really moved in 10 years. Is that a concern?
Well, we're transforming the bank to make sure that we're in a very different position. So we're changing the strategy of the bank, as we talked about, and that entails selling 65,000 employees. It's 25% of our employee base. So we can really focus and double down on the businesses that make sense.
Of the 230,000 you have, you're selling 65,000?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's a lot. And I think it's under the belief that where we truly excel, we will move every single day $4 trillion of volume for 5,000 multinational firms. And there's no other bank in the world that can do that. That's an incredible asset for America. It's a strategic asset for the states because you'd much rather have American companies operating on American banking rails and not foreign banking rails, particularly these days. So that's what we're focusing the bank around, is that client base. And it's a big transformation, David, right? This is bold. This takes some courage to do. We're making really good progress on it. And we're putting a lot of investment into modernizing the bank because we've had some regulatory orders against us as well to make sure that we make the investments we need to and making sure the culture is there of real excellence, but also to be a human bank. We've talked about that being important. Put all of that together, that's a lot of transformation, it's a lot of work, but we're determined around it, and we're completely convinced that that puts the bank into a different profitability, different return profile, and ultimately the benefit of our shareholders.
Suppose I'm listening to what you say, and I say, yeah, she's obviously articulate, she's committed, maybe I'll buy her stock. You think your stock's a good buy right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Very.
If I buy it, I can get an appreciation of some percent I can be happy with, you think? Not as good as private equity returns, but good, right? For young professionals,
yes,
why should they want to work in a large commercial bank? What's the appeal of it? Why, if somebody goes to Harvard Business School, why not go to a private equity firm, a hedge firm, one of these, you know, important organizations? How do you recruit people into a place like Citi? What is it that you say is so great about being a commercial banker?
America's global banks are right in the center of some of the biggest challenges that are going on in the world geopolitically. We get pulled into the conversations. We're playing a critical role in supporting clients and countries. And you get an opportunity to come and work and learn in a team environment, in an apprenticeship model, on how to tackle and solve some of these pieces.
What do you do for relaxation to get away from the office from time to time? Are you a golfer or something?
Yeah, well, look, I love spending time with my kids. So, being able to have a chance to spend some time with them. They're less enthusiastic now than they used to be when they're little about that, but I'll take what I get.
Do they tell their friends who you are, or they don't want to tell?
Oh, so when I was announced as CEO, I knew it was going to happen. I called up my Duke son, and I didn't pick up, as usual. And I said, please call me.
Son and he didn't pick up?
No, didn't pick up. He sent a message about, I'm busy. I said, no, please, I've got some news. Could you pick up? And then he's like, Mum, I'm on Zoom calls. I'm really busy. And he did not pick up. I ended up having to text him the next morning that it was going to be announced. And then he came back to me at the end of the day and said, Mum, it was a text message, it wasn't a call. I said, Mum, you're all over the news today. Are you important or something? ...
Thanks for listening. To hear more of my interviews, you can subscribe and download my podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen.